Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Kelly Vance. I'm the attorney for appellant Dolly Alvarez. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay,
this case is about a this case is about a covered loss. It was reported in March 2018. Respondent accepted coverage and made a very small payment of $678 for what it described as other physical damage / insured property. That's in excerpt page 40. Ms. Alvarez did not know. Ms. Alvarez was unaware that her property had been vandalized. When her rent payment didn't come through, the bank notified her and she went over there, but she didn't have a key. Mr. Rich, who was her tenant, kept all the keys, didn't return any. And she finally received a letter from him dated mid-February saying that he had moved. She tried to find him. She tried to get in the house. When she finally got in the house, she was horrified to find all this damage. There was holes kicked in the walls, light fixtures torn out, broken windows, torn up cabinet doors. The place was basically torn apart. She reported
Counsel, this is Judge Rawlinson, but doesn't that just point out why it's important to have insurance, different insurance when you're renting the property as opposed to insurance when you're actually residing on the property?
Well, the policy is a homeowner's policy. It was renewed twice since this claim came up as a homeowner's policy, not a renter's policy. Now, Mr. Thorlakson, respondent's sales agent, had said that he would have renewed it or he would have converted it to a rental policy, but he didn't do that. And he's had two opportunities since then. Now, the policy itself has a clause that provides coverage for lost rental value if the house becomes uninhabitable for some reason. So this homeowner's policy does extend coverage for lost rental value. So our position is that any reasonable person looking at the policy would see there's coverage for lost rental value. That means you can rent all or part of the house.
Well, maybe part
of it. It was reported, though.
But, counsel, wasn't there a provision that the insurance policy was conditioned on her residing on the premises?
No, that's not true. The policy is an all-risk policy, as we argued below. That means that all risks are covered unless there's a specific exclusion. Now, under an all-risk policy, the default position is coverage. There has to be a specific exclusion that bars coverage.
Was there language in the policy that referenced residency on the premises?
The policy definitions define residence premises, but it does not make clear that if you move out and convert it to a rental, you lose coverage. And in fact, that issue came before this very court in the Howard case, where the court refused to allow an insurance company to deny coverage when a house was converted to a rental. And that case was cited by the Farmers versus Trutnick in the Court of Appeals of the State of Oregon with approval. And the Farmers versus Trutnick case held that when an insurance company wants to deny coverage based on a definition, it has a duty to make it clear what will cause a policyholder to lose coverage.
Did you cite the Howard case in your brief?
I did. I cited both the Howard case and the Trutnick case in the brief. Okay. And this came up in the context of my ambiguity argument on pages 17 through 19 of my response to the summary judgment motion, where I argued that policy that has a definition that seems to like limit what's covered and has a lost rental value provision, the court must interpret the policy in a way most favorable to the insured, which means that all reasonable inferences, all interpretations should be given with an eye towards giving the insurance policy benefits to the policy holder and in order to avoid forfeiture. And I cited the O'Neill case, and I took a quotation from the O'Neill case on page 19 in my opposition to the summary judgment motion, saying the courts must interpret these insurance policies in such a way as to avoid forfeiture. The Trutnitz case held that it was directly on point, although the defense tries to distinguish the Farmers versus Trutnitz case. The important takeaway from that case is that if an insurance company wants to limit the coverage it's extending, it has a duty to tell the insured exactly what causes forfeiture of policy rights. There's nothing in this policy that says if you convert the premises to a rental, you lose coverage. And in fact, in our excerpt, page 17, is a renewal of the policy in August 2018. They renewed the policy as a homeowner's policy, despite Mr. Thorlockson stating that he would have converted it to a rental policy. They didn't do that. And this was months after Mr. Pritchard had walked the site and had been informed that the damage done was vandalism done by a tenant.
Counsel, now, what do we make of the fact that Country Mutual sought assurances from Ms. Alvarez that she continued to reside on the premises? Does that matter for purposes of our analysis? And she informed them that she did reside on the property. Does that matter for
our
analysis?
First of all, I don't believe that that's an accurate statement. Mrs. Alvarez, her testimony was not that she spoke to them and told them she was still living there. She had no reason to do that. She had lost rental coverage. The clerk at Mr. Thorlockson's office says that she talked to Ms. Alvarez, but Ms. Alvarez has a very heavy accent. I've sat 2 feet away from her, and I have tried to understand what she says, and sometimes it takes 4 times before I finally hear the words clearly. She's got a very heavy accent. I don't believe on the telephone the conversation was, are you still living there? Oh, yes, that wouldn't have been true. She took a live-in position on O'Neill Road at the adult care facility. She had no reason to say, I still live at my old house. And she did not put in, I was mistaken about this because I misunderstood what she said. She did not notify the post office that she'd moved. Country says she notified, we heard from the post office that she'd moved. She didn't tell the post office that she moved. What she did was notify each and every person that sent her mail that she moved, and she notified Mr. Thorlockson. Now, Mr. Thorlockson does not deny that. He simply says, I have no recollection of her contacting me in 2016 to inform me she no longer lived at the house at 5110 Newberg Drive. Well, he says he has no recollection. He's not denying that she notified him.
He just doesn't. What does that even matter if Howard controls? I mean, the whole point
I don't think
of Howard,
it does.
The whole point of Howard, the way I read it, is people have fluid lifestyles. So they live in their house. Something comes up. They decide to move. You know, there's nothing in the policy that says, as of the date the policy is issued, you have to, provided you live in your house, you will still have coverage if you move out. So you have this whole idea, and why Howard says explicitly and unambiguously, and explicitly means just say it, you know, that this is not a renter's policy. If you don't live in the home and you rent it to somebody else, this policy does not provide coverage. I mean, I'm sure there are more artful ways of saying that, but that's the way I read Howard, or else you get into this situation where people are fluid. They don't know. Well, I rent, you know, at the time that I got the coverage, I lived there, and then I rented it to my neighbor for 2 months, and then I came back. And, you know, and to me, Howard was almost, and Trutonich, the language in there was even less unambiguous than the present case. So it just, you know, I know those are all softballs, but I'm just, you know, it just seemed to me that Howard controls and this sort of estoppel argument that's being made doesn't really make any difference.
Well, I believe that, you know, this is a diversity case under the Erie Doctrine. We're applying Oregon law and we're applying Howard because it's a Ninth Circuit case.
Sure.
But Farmers versus Frontenac, I would argue, is even more clear in favor of Ms. Alvarez, because it says that if you're going to rely on a policy definition, you need to make it clear as to what the rules are. And it's, if you're going to deny coverage a year after the fact, after you've already paid on the claim and accepted coverage, yep, you just don't get to do that. The Oregon Insurance Code provides that coverage has to be determined within a reasonable time. The proverbial reasonable time is 30 days. Well, she reported the claim in March. Mr. Pritchard came out on April 16th to see the damage the tenant had done. The next day, they paid a check for property damage other. They didn't characterize it as a water leak when they wrote that check. They sent it to Ms. Alvarez, by the way, at her address where she had moved to. So you have an acceptance of coverage and payment. There's no distinction for paying a water leak or paying vandalism. That same policy definition was in place when they paid the first check for $678, which, by the way, was only 1% of the amount of the loss. What happened here was they underpaid the claim by a wide margin, and Ms. Alvarez had to hire a public adjuster to help her deal with the insurance company. It was just above her pay grade. She couldn't understand things. Mr. Blegg comes in. He does a detailed estimate. He takes photographs and videotapes, and he gives them to Ms. Shortell, which is respondent's adjuster at the time. He invites her several times, please come out and look at this. This is not a water leak. The holes kicked in the walls. For her part, Ms. Alvarez testified in her declaration that Mr. Pritchard, when he came to view the damage, he didn't just look at the skylight and say, yeah, it's leaking and leak. He took measurements in every room. He took photographs of the holes kicked in the wall, the broken cabinet doors, the damaged countertop, the light fixtures torn out. Why would he do that if it was a simple water leak? What he did was he just decided to not pay the large part of the claim. And it wasn't until Mr. Blegg came on the scene and starts talking to the insurance company, says, look, come out and look at this. You see Mr. Blegg's declaration, pages 34 to 39, he details his frustrations in trying to get Country Mutual to look at this claim and see it for what it was.
Counsel, this is Judge Pius. Did you want to save some time for rebuttal?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Am I about at that point?
Yeah, you're at 1 minute, 43 seconds left for rebuttal.
All right, thank you.
Okay, let's hear from Country Insurance.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Denning, and I represent Country Mutual Insurance Company in this matter. First, I'd like to address some of the statements made by Mr. Vance in opening. First, it's not accurate that Ms. Alvarez has testified that she told Country Mutual she wasn't living at the property, although that's stated in the briefing at the lower court. There isn't a declaration in the record, and there never was to that point. The only evidence that's been presented about her moving out of the house and Country's attempt to talk to her about that is the evidence that Country has been able to provide, and that is I believe quite clear that we were concerned about whether or not she was living in the house, and that we took affirmative steps to make sure that she still was when we had an indication that that wasn't the case. Second, regarding the renewals spoken about by Mr. Vance, if you look at the renewal declarations, it's pretty clear that They were provided after Country had been told that Ms. Alvarez had changed her mailing address and had been mailing documents to that address. But that's not reflective of anything more than that, because we had been told that her mailing address had changed. Furthermore, with regard to the statements regarding the payment of the loss, the payment check came with a cover letter that we have submitted into the evidence that explains in pretty good detail exactly what Country's understanding of the claim being submitted and what the payment is for. So to say that it's an ambiguous check for other physical damage without any explanation of what it's for or what coverages Country thinks potentially apply is just simply not correct. Frankly, it's indicative of the fact that Ms. Alvarez didn't reveal to Country that she wasn't living in the house until the litigation. That this claim was paid at all.
Did you cite Trutanich or Howard in your brief?
I discussed Trutanich. I don't believe I cited Howard, and I can't see a reference in a review
Trutanich. I don't see Trutanich cited in your brief. Are you sure you cited it?
I believe that I cited it in the discussion of. Let's see. Is this? Yeah, if you go to page 19 of our brief, we discuss Trutanich and how it was distinguished in Veritas versus Country Mutual.
I see you do. I stand corrected, but not Howard.
No, and I admit that I do not believe I've read Howard. I'm not sure of its exact contents. I can speak to Trutanich, which I understand cites to Howard.
Now, you must be familiar with Howard, though.
I probably am, but I admit as I sit here today, I cannot recall the exact contents.
I must admit, you know, that's kind of a bit, that's a bit surprising, because as a federal court, you know, we're bound to follow prior Ninth Circuit precedent. If any case looks like it might apply here, it's Howard.
Well, I believe that Trutanich, as Mr. Vance, I believe, correctly stated, we do apply Oregon law here, and to the extent that Howard is...
But we apply Ninth Circuit law that interprets Oregon law. We follow Ninth Circuit law that interprets Oregon law. And so you have Howard, and you just... I read your brief, and I was like, what is going on here? Why would you just disregard addressing Howard?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't see Howard cited to in plaintiff's brief.
I can't believe that you didn't think about Howard.
It was cited in plaintiff's brief.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you as to what I was thinking when this briefing was drafted nearly a year ago. I apologize.
You must have done some preparation for today's argument. So are you telling me that you have no familiarity with Howard?
I'm telling you, as I sit here today, I can't recall the facts of Howard. Reread the party's briefing.
Then I don't have a question for you. It will be a meaningless dialogue.
Fair enough.
Counsel, is the insurance company taking a position on whether or not Ms. Alvarez gave prompt notice of the claim?
Yes, it's our position that she did not, particularly because she withheld meaningful facts about the loss until after her lawsuit. And as is discussed in our briefing, there's a number of relevant facts that we didn't learn until her first motion for partial summary judgment, including that not only did she not live in the house, but that she didn't retain any method to access it. That was first revealed in a motion for summary judgment. And although the standard for providing a proof of loss is pretty flexible under Oregon law, it does require that you provide enough information for the insurance company to meaningfully evaluate the loss and the coverage. And, you know, because and to get to kind of the heart, what I think is the heart of the issue here, the grant of coverage defines what property is actually covered, and that is the resident premises. And unlike in Trutnich, the language in the Country Mutual policy clearly applies the residency requirement to all aspects of that grant of coverage, both the residence building or any other building. And that was the distinction in Trutnich, that the court found the language to be ambiguous, and that was the basis of the decision there. As the district court found in Veritas, analyzing the exact same language, there isn't an ambiguity here. It's clear that the residency requirement applies to all aspects of the resident premises. And there is no dispute that Ms. Alvarez did not live there.
That case didn't involve an issue of whether there's coverage. It involved the amount of coverage.
Veritas or Trutnich?
Veritas.
My recollection is that it was an issue of coverage.
I'm not positive, so I'm going from memory, but I'll have to look it up.
But in Veritas, it was the exact same policy language that we have here. It was another Country Mutual policy with the same clause. And the court there found that the ambiguity that the Trutnich court identified, favorably citing to Howard, simply was not present in this policy language. And it's not a condition of forfeiture, it's the grant of coverage itself. We're defining what the covered property is. And as Your Honor, Judge Rawlinson pointed out earlier,
just looking at Veritas, it says, you know, it distinguishes Trutnich, and it explains that it was a coverage denial, not a liability limit. That's what it says.
Then I stand corrected, Your Honor.
So then that case is simply not applicable, is it?
I would disagree. It analyzes the meaning of that phrase, and the court clearly states that in order for coverage to apply, it's unambiguous that the insured has to reside there. Whether it's applying that lack of ambiguity to a coverage limit or to the existence of coverage at all, I think is not a distinction without a difference. The question is, what does the language mean, and how is it applied? And I think
but if it says that I'm distinguishing Trutnich, and Trutnich is closer on point to the facts in this case because it involves the issue of coverage ab initio, and the court in Veritas says it's different, doesn't that tell you that Veritas is more than a distinction without a difference?
No, I don't think so, because the law of policy interpretation is the same in both cases, and that's what's really important here. The question is really about what the language means. Is it ambiguous? And if not, we need to apply it as it's written, and that is the same in both cases, and that is the key issue here, and that is why we believe that the distinction is not a meaningful difference. Because the same law is being applied to policy language, and we're distinguishing not between the type of relief sought, but what the Trutnich language says and whether it's ambiguous versus what the Country Mutual language in Veritas said and whether it's ambiguous. And that is why Veritas is on point and should control here.
Veritas is a district court case. It doesn't control.
Apologies, Your Honor. That is why Veritas should be considered as valid reasoning for our position here. My apologies. Control was not the correct language to use. And as Judge Rawlinson pointed out earlier, it is meaningful that someone lives in the house or not. If the owner lives in the house, the risks are different. And the policy does contemplate that an owner could rent out a portion of the house, as plaintiff correctly pointed out, but it's that portion of the house. The policy clearly contemplates in all its provisions that the insured lives there, and some of them, like that partial coverage for rental, doesn't make a lot of sense if you read it any other way. Under Oregon law, we do need to read the policy as a whole, and if we look at those other provisions, it's clear that the residency requirement is a part of the entire policy. Similarly, a renter's policy is not exactly the same, does not have exactly the same coverages, and would treat some of these risks differently. For example, there would not be exclusion for types of damage to part of the home you rent out if the company knew you were renting out the whole thing. That would render a lot of coverages illusory. So there are meaningful differences. It's not simply a matter of switching from one to the other without any kind of changes. That's why there's more than one policy. And with regard to the loss itself, I mean, we simply did not know all the facts until after suit was filed. And if your honors don't have any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
You're out of time. Thank you very much. I think the other side has some rebuttal time.
Yes, your honor, I do. May I proceed?
Yes.
This policy, Dolly Alvarez moved into this house as her primary residence. There was coverage for a couple of years or so before she moved out. One of the things about a homeowner's policy is it also, you pay for coverage for your personal property. She didn't have personal property in the rental house. She was paying for something and she was getting nothing in return for it. Your comments about the Veritas case, save me a little time. Howard governs. Howard's an appellate decision. Veritas is a trial court decision. I believe if it's controverted by Howard, Howard governs. And the thing about the proof of loss is any event, as I briefed below, that allows an insurance company to inspect the damage and estimate the loss. Well, when Mr. Pritchard showed up on April 16th to view the damage, that was proof of loss. And in Parks versus Farmers, which I cited, the proof of loss was considered to be a telephone call. So there were a number of factual arguments made by respondent below. They were all disputed. Every factual assertion made by respondent were disputed. So the trial court didn't make factual findings, but on appeal and a summary judgment, the court has to view all evidence in a light most favorable to the non-moving party. I would submit that the arguments made by respondent below were refuted. Summary judgment was inappropriate. We request that the court reverse and remand.
Okay. Thank you. You just finished up your time right on the button. So with that, we thank both of you for your arguments, and the matter is submitted at this time.
Thank you. Have a good week, everyone.
Court for this session stands adjourned.